and unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Yes, good evening, and welcome, one and all. Maybe you could just join me for a moment in just looking around and looking into the eyes of your Sangha. The triple treasure, more important now than ever. Buddha, our awakened mind, and Dharma, things as they are, and Sangha, the community of beings with whom we practice. So thank you so much for coming out this evening to this Dharma talk. So, you know, we talk a lot about suffering in Buddhism. I mean, Buddha himself is reputed to have said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and relief from suffering. And of course, dukkha is the term, the Sanskrit term for suffering. And certainly I've talked a lot about suffering, and it's a very important thing for us to study since it's one of the fundamental truths of our human existence. And dukkha, you know, as we've talked about before, literally means an axle that is off balance. It's like the axle hole isn't quite aligned and the cart is out of balance. So it's this feeling of out of balanceness, unease, right? But did you know, what about when the axle has a good hole? Did you know that there's something called sukha? We talk a lot about dukkha. I'd like to talk tonight about sukha, which is literally the good axle hole. And it literally translates as happiness, pleasure, ease, joy, bliss. These are some of the translations of the word sukha. So just as in Zen, we honor both sides, form and emptiness, difference and unity, I thought on this beautiful spring evening, I would honor the aspect of sukha and talk a little bit about my understanding of this aspect of our practice and how it's important to look at this side of our practice, as well as looking at the side of suffering. Buddha talks about this himself in the Pali Canon, the Kalama Sutta, one of those stories where he's talking to villagers who are coming to him for teaching. And one of the things that he says to them is to enter and dwell in things or qualities that are skillful, blameless, praised by the wise, and conducive to well-being and happiness when put into practice. So this is this term sukha. Buddha is saying it is important to pay attention to what is conducive to fostering, to nourishing our well-being and our happiness in practice, not in theory, but in practice. And so the Pali Canon, I am no expert in the Pali Canon. I refer to the ancient stories when I can, and I go there when I can. I think that there's an understanding in the Pali Canon, from the little bit that I studied for this, for sukha, that they are seem to really be carefully pointing out that we have to be careful that we know that we're talking about the pleasure from intensive spiritual absorption, that we're not talking about, it's non-sensual pleasure, they say, in apparently. And I would like to respectfully offer not a different point of view, but maybe you could think of it as an extension beyond that. Of course, we don't want to be grasping onto any objects, be they sensual objects or mental objects or anything where we're putting our delusionary ideas upon others and then clinging to fixed views. So I'm not suggesting that this should be any exception. However, I think that this extremely, attitude that some of the ancient teachings seem to have, and it might just be my limited understanding, but such as it is, that's the understanding I have, that we have to turn away from anything that is in the realm of what they would call sensual pleasure, is something that we should avoid. And I would actually like to offer that, and I'm not talking about, when I say sensual, I'm not talking about getting into the whole realm about sexuality and all that. I'm talking about our senses. I'm talking about the pleasure and joy that we experience as human beings through our sensory modalities. How can this be wholesome? Obviously, we could talk about when it's unwholesome, but I want to focus on when it's wholesome. And I think especially in this time of the pandemic and this time of the great suffering of the earth and of our isolation from each other, that it's extremely important to understand the deep nourishment and help that we get when we can open ourselves to wholesome sensory contact with other beings and with, and be they human or plant, animal, elemental, enjoyment, sukha. So, you know, biologically, little beings and animals in general, it is our urge, you would say, towards pleasure, towards, oh, that feels good, which actually guides us to get our needs met. So there's a biological function to just paying attention to what our needs are as mammals, as beings, and to recognize that to a certain extent, we're drawn to, when we're healthy and wholesome, we're drawn to, this food brings me pleasure. I want to feel the pleasure of my stomach being full. Or the parent reaching for their child, holding their child. This is such an important part of healthy human development. You know, children that are not touched have a very difficult, a much more difficult time in wholesome functioning than those that are fortunate enough to be in an environment where there's physical touch and enjoyment, that sweet enjoyment that we have playing with our hands and holding their hands and patting their heads and all those kinds of things. In fact, the oxytocin, which is the hormone that's released when we're touched, it reduces our stress and it contributes to a feeling of belonging and relaxation and trust and actually to our psychological stability. So there's real benefit to allowing the wholesome enjoyment of the sensory contact with other beings. Now, of course, the trouble with this COVID-19 time is a lot of us are not having that kind of contact with other human beings. You know, some of us live alone. Some of us maybe live with we're only seeing maybe one person or two people. And so I want to talk about both, about what this can be and feel like with other beings, but also if we're not in contact with other humans, the ways that we can experience sukha when we're not, if we're alone. and which is a good thing to know anytime, not just during COVID-19. So the thing about oxytocin, there's a book that I read by a psychologist called Donna Jackson Nakasawa, and she was talking about the importance for children in what they call in psychology secure attachment, the role that it plays to have this kind of wholesome physical touch. And she says for parents, and I think that especially in this time, any of us who are parents, grandparents, who have contact with young people, little ones as well as teenagers, Dr. Jackson Nakasawa says that a 20-second full body hug physiologically calms the amygdala, that part of ourself that reads fear into everything and generates stress. So in this time of anxiety, especially for our young people, what's the world going to be like? What's my world going to be like? Is there even going to be a world? This fear that gets constellated and really, really stresses them out, stresses us out. She's suggesting that the simple act of enjoying a 20-second full body hug calms and nourishes and settles our beings. So what about if we're alone and we're not in a situation where we can practice this kind of, I would call it wholesome sukha with other beings? Well, this is where I think the wholesome sensory faculties really come in handy, because I don't know about you, but right now flowers are one of my absolute most beloved companions. And flowers are everywhere right now. The enjoyment that we can experience from taking in being with the flowers, being with our animal companions. I know some of you have animal companions. By letting ourselves be nourished by the food that we prepare, not just gobbling it, but enjoying this food, enjoying our animal companions, enjoying the flowers and the plants that surround us. We're so fortunate to live here in Santa Cruz. We can go to the ocean. We can go to the forest, and we can allow ourselves to be nourished by this joy and bliss and pleasure that the natural world offers us as well. In Buddha's Brain, one of my favorite books, neuropsychologist and Buddhist practitioner Rick Hansen talks about the positive impact that it has on us when we hold positive emotions in our consciousness. So we don't just, you know, that's where, for example, enjoying our food can really come in, rather than just gobbling our soup. Oh, this is an opportunity to actually open the pleasure body and allow this sukha, this experience, to fill my awareness. It helps us, he says, internalize the reward body, so we don't have to be grasping outside in an unwholesome way, if we allow the reward to penetrate us and to be part of our experience by holding it in our awareness. Catherine, my root teacher and the root teacher of many of us at Santa Cruz Zen Center, was a great teacher of this side of practice in her way. She also taught us a lot about dukkha. She taught both sukha and dukkha, because of course both are true. And I have just started to explore in this exquisite little book that Jean and Dana put together called Most Intimate Ordinary Way Recollections of Catherine Thanis. They invited a bunch of Catherine students to write memories and teachings from Catherine's life and our time practicing with Catherine. And I think when I give talks now, every talk I want to refer to one of these because they're absolute gems. So I'd like to start with one that is in Patrick's essay. He has two sections in his part that he contributed. And I want to read the part that he calls On the Most Important Thing. He says, Catherine's talks during Sesshin made me realize that sitting was the most important thing I could be doing. During the long, cold Rohatsu Sesshin in the mountain retreat center just north of Santa Cruz, I felt locked and confined in my stiff body. But she encouraged us to connect with the lush, verdant environment that surrounded us. She guided us to an open-hearted acceptance of all the sense experiences, the meals, the cold, the fatigue, the smoky wood stove. Gradually, I felt more ease and stability, and I became grateful to the other practitioners who were supporting the practice. I even felt a kinship with the passengers in the airplanes I heard overhead. This was a great ballet of life activity, awake, heart, mind, body, mind. So one of the things that really touches me about this teaching that Patrick is recollecting of Catherine's is the sukha, the enjoyment, the open-hearted acceptance of all the sense experiences, even for those which we might consider uncomfortable, like cold or like the smoky wood stove. And this is where, you know, whenever we have this positing of opposite, sukha, dukkha, form, emptiness, of course, there's the way that they are maybe not so separate. And so this place where if we're really empty and open and allowing ourselves to feel this open-hearted acceptance of all the senses, then in a way, we can enjoy the cold as well as the warmth. And we can enjoy the, not just the sound of the bell and the sound of the birds, but the sound of the airplane or the sound of the neighbor's leaf blower, you know? Can we enjoy all of these offerings of the world? So there's one other piece that I would like to mention about this practice of enjoyment, this practice of sukha. And again, I will read the definition of it to make sure that I'm not veering. Oh, goodness, more people in the waiting room. Ah, one of my dear friends coming in from the Bay Area. Okay, let him in. Okay, and Corrine is coming in too. Okay, excuse me about that. All right. So, sukha, translated as happiness, pleasure, ease, joy, and bliss. And excuse me, this waiting room is okay. Bear with me here. There seems to be a problem. So I'm just going to...
Guffey, you can just let me take care of the waiting room.
Okay, would you? It looks like Dwayne is trying to get in and I keep admitting him and he doesn't get in. So I'm going to keep talking and Jean, you will manage the waiting room. Thank you. Okay, sorry about that. Okay. So when Buddha was talking with the Kalama community about the value of entering and dwelling in things or qualities that are skillful, blameless, praised by the wise, and conducive to well-being and happiness when put into practice, one of the modalities that he suggested as a way to do this, as another way that we can practice sukha, were the Brahmaviharas. This is, of course, the one of the great teachings of Buddha and one of the great practices. And I think that often maybe we've been talking about it in the foundations class a little bit, but it's very connected to the practice of opening ourselves to sukha. And I just would like to mention that before I open this up for any kind of conversation that might want to happen. So as we know, these Brahmaviharas, these great ways that support our practice, metta, or loving kindness, the practice of wishing that others be well, and the practice of bringing love and kindness to others, we ourselves need to be soaked and saturated in love and generosity and kindness in order to extend that to others. So this is a way of considering that our ability to look for joy, to look for love, to look for pleasure, to feel it, to then share it with others, to give it to others, to wish it for others. This is one of the ways that we don't just practice for ourselves, but we extend this loving kindness to others. The Brahmavihara mudita, sympathetic joy, the feeling happy at the happiness of others. Well, guess what? If you want to experience joy at the joy of others, you need to know what joy is. You need to know it when you see it, and you need to know how to invite it forth and mirror it and gently encourage this in others. I know that sometimes I'm with folks who just kind of have their blinders on for their particular dukkha, their particular suffering, and there may be something that's happening not that far away, just in their immediate vicinity, that is actually could be a source of great happiness or pleasure. And they can't see it because they're just looking at the object of suffering. So in this case, to be able to, you know, support and encourage and invite someone to maybe look around or someone to maybe consider, well, what brings you joy? I understand what brings suffering and sorrow. Could you help me understand a little bit about what brings you joy? And then to enjoy that with them. The Brahmavihara Karuna, compassion, the ability to feel the pain and the suffering of other beings, and then to wish that they be free from suffering. And perhaps even to respond as Avalokiteshvara, to take some action to contribute to the relief of their suffering. This involves for us the ability to feel pain without turning away and without trying to fix it. Again, it's this place in between. It's neither pain nor pleasure. It's just this human capacity to feel together. That is such a gift for people to be on the receiving end. And then the final Brahmavihara, upeccha, or equanimity. I would assert that one of the ways for us to feel and be equanimous is the ability to just let life flow through us like a river and not get knocked off course. To be like that bamboo that the wind can blow, but we're deeply rooted. So we can stand and move and flex, but we don't get knocked over. And this is upeccha. This is equanimity. This ability to feel deeply everything that's happening and to just stay present with it. Not attach, not grasp, but to stay present and be with this. So these Brahma Viharas that the Buddha suggested to the townspeople is one of the ways for us to really, it's conducive to our well-being and happiness to practice these Brahma Viharas, this actual expression of our capacity for sukha, our capacity to feel and share happiness, pleasure, ease, joy, and bliss, even in a time such as these, concurrent with the suffering, right alongside the suffering, hand in hand, intimate with the suffering, is also joy and pleasure. And maybe one moment we're more in touch with one, and maybe one moment we're more in touch with the other. And I just invite us to welcome and encourage the wholesome practice of sukha to help with this, with ease some of the suffering of this troubled world. So that is what I wanted to offer you this evening. And I am more than happy to hear any comments or questions that you may have. And I think if you could just raise your hand, I'll call on you. If there's anything you'd like to add from your own practice with any of these things, I would love to have your wisdom also put into the pool. And maybe even if you've just found anything that you do experience brings you some joy and pleasure in this time, that could be really helpful for somebody else to hear as well. If there's somebody here who's struggling with how to access that part of their own life right now. Ah, the silence. Patrick.
Well, those early practice periods up at Jikoji, our bodies really loomed large there because of the weather, because we were also so new in practice and just trying to figure out this sitting body, and then Catherine was just such a great teacher of body practice, you know, saying that, you know, this is what we know right now. We might have an idea about what practice is, but we really only know our knees. We really only know the heat from the stove. And just to keep coming back there in the way that she kept reminding us that was a real gift. And then, as you talked about, to really feel joy that we're letting all of these sense objects in so deeply was a real gift of those early sesshins. So that's why I wanted to be able to write that those few paragraphs about Catherine, because it was a real gift that we can take with us, right, that I'm still holding, you know, almost 30 years later. Thank you.
Margarita, are you wanting to say something?
Yeah, thank you. I wasn't quite sure if there is a place for one raise one hand or you just go like this.
Yeah, there's some if fancy go, way to do it, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah, old-fashioned way.
I just wanted to say that apart from general practice, in I'd say the last 6-9 months have been a period where I realized I was going through some kind of emotional and to some extent psychological rebirth. And right before COVID-19 hit, I was thinking I should spend some time in personal retreat in my own home a lot. And and then the COVID-19 arrived and I said, oh, okay, right on schedule. But then I also realized as I was practicing that this was not a time for me of what would have been extreme denial to see 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And that I needed a balance, but otherwise it did not feel right. So for a week enthusiastically, I threw myself into the practice and most of it was good. And then I started feeling, it was not a sense that I was getting bored or restless, it was that things were off. And I realized I need to exercise. Mm-hmm. And I do some art, you know, and I need to do some art. And I was feeling almost guilty about having the desire of art. And I listen a lot to Dharma talks and I have Dharma books and I read frequently because they're a source of inspiration and they're really helpful. And I came around into the same little, I don't know how I call it, corner, shall we say, that you mentioned before, which has to do that particularly the older, the Theravada text tend to be pretty much, I'd say still on the ascetic side, you know what I mean? And I studied for many years with Tibetans, like 30 years. And so my main Dharma training comes from them. And my teacher kept saying that the pleasure of the senses have to be enjoyed like ornaments. So you don't attach to them. But even when you practice, your senses need to be open. You're not shutting yourself down. You're taking life in its entirety. And so I had a kind of a remembrance of that as you were thinking. Mm-hmm. And I find that now I'm still finding my way of, what do I do now? So it helps for me in any case to have a schedule. But I've also been trying to experiment. What if instead of sitting first thing in the morning, I do a drawing? Mm-hmm. And I see all the judgments that come with it. But then I realize I can still sit afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So some of it I think has to do that this is a time also to find meaning and joy in life. Otherwise, it's just too needlessly difficult.
Well, and I would actually say, and I think I've spoke about this before in one of my talks, a couple of talks ago, is, you know, the aspect of love. I think that part of why we're in this pickle that we're in with destroying species in our planet and, being so detached from the natural world is that we don't love the earth enough, because know, that which we love, we do not harm that which we love.
That's true.
So there's this quality of openness that I think is underlying what I'm inviting here, that I feel a bit like a proselytizer sometimes of wanting to encourage people to turn towards the joy and towards the beauty and foster it and cultivate it and nurture it, because I think that it will actually in the long run help us be more motivated and motivate to take action to save and take care of that which we love and those whom we love. So thank you for sharing your experience with your retreat. Yeah. Yes, Michael. You have to unmute.
Hello.
Hi, good to see you. It's been a while.
It has.
And, yeah.
Just going off what Margarita had just said, I've throughout this process, I've been trying to make a habit of breaking habits. And one of those is joining the Dharma Talk and being able to see all the lovely members of the Sangha, and glad to know, you know, some of you have seen in person, but you all seem to be doing well. But I feel like through this process, it's been established a new and a better foundational rhythm for my life. Mm-hmm. It's pushed me to not rely too much on the actual Zendo to foster my practice and to take it out into my own personal practice and into the real world. And at first I would, didn't know what to do during this, situation of staying at home, and everything is so different now. And, but then I learned to just embrace the extra time that I've been given to be at home. I've learned to, do projects. Like, I've been doing projects that I've been meaning to do since I first moved into my house, you know, like almost a year ago, which I initially wanted to do. And I just like put some nice shelves in the kitchen that I've been wanting to do. And it just was like, I don't know, like my other housemates really appreciate it. And it's not just something that I was doing for myself. And I can see it's open space more in the kitchen. And it's just been something where it's not for my own pleasure or joy, but for the whole house as a whole together. And I've seen dramatic changes through a lot of people's demeanors and interactions through relationships, because we've been able to invest more into our own living situation and slow down a little bit. And you know, I would say there's many things that I do miss out on now, and being able to see friends and go to visit my family and do things like that. But it's really repositioned my focus onto myself. And I had a difficulty at first because I felt that was being selfish, but realizing that the better foundation that I have, the better I can give to others. And also what Margarita was saying about, I'm reading a book on Tibetan Buddhism, and they're really emphasizing just like switching things up. And even in your own meditation practice of like sitting outside or opening your eyes like very wide while you're meditating and being able to be at peace with yourself without being distracted, or chanting, or then focusing on your breath. And, you know, just going through that helps me break my own habits, which helps me just be more present, because I, you know, find that sometimes I become enslaved to them. And even though they grant me pleasure, it's limited my opportunity to explore other aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So again, making that distinction for ourselves, what's wholesome and what's not wholesome for us, you know, this is not an absolute, you know, any more than any other encouragement, but really checking it out for yourself. Yeah, which way do you need to move? Which way do you need to adapt to bring wholesome energy to your own being and your home, your household, and ultimately to our community and our world, when we'll be getting out there a little bit more. Lovely to hear your voices, those of you who are speaking. Okay, then. It seems like that's what wants to be said for tonight. So why don't we mute ourselves and chant the vows. Lori, are you up for leading us in one round of the vows?
Beings are numberless. I bow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I bow to become it.